to the Young'uns podcast. I say welcome back. That's a bit presumptuous of me, isn't it? I just assume that you're part of the furniture now. We might have some new people. But whether you are a newcomer to the Young'uns podcast, perhaps you've listened to the Young'uns podcast before, but you've not listened for a while and you're just dabbling. I wonder if it's improved. So give it a listen. Give it a try again. Or perhaps you're currently on a Young'uns podcast binge. Maybe this is your 17th Young'uns podcast in a row and you've got that adrenaline rush that people get when they do the Young'uns podcast binges. Some people do it for charity. Other people just do it for pure hedonistic pleasure, unbridled joy. Some people do it as a replacement to recreational drugs. Some medical professionals actually recommend the Young'uns podcast as a recreational drug replacement. Whatever your reasons for listening to the Young'uns podcast, or wherever you've come from, you're very welcome. And this week, you're in for an absolute treat because we've got three brilliant friends who we're in the company of this week. We've got Mick and Susie Darling, our gypsy folk friends, who tell amazing tales and sing brilliant songs about a lot of the songs about their lives as travelling people. And we're also back with the Hut people, who I suppose you could class as Young'uns podcast regulars. Obviously, Sam Pert is a bit of a health guru, and in podcast episodes past, he did a series for us called Juice a Minute, where each week he would talk about a uniquely different vegetable and fruit juice and talk about the health properties and give us a recipe. And also, we've had music and a bit of conversation with the Hut people before, but this week we're going to be exploring a little bit more about their musical heritage, as well as, of course, ascertaining that very important question which we put to Greg Russell and Kieran Algar last week: what is your favourite biscuit? And this, we're asking this question because this was put to us by a journalist in an interview recently, and we promised that not only would we reveal to him our favourite biscuits, which we still haven't actually done yet, we still haven't revealed the Young'uns' favourite biscuits. Perhaps we'll have to do that next podcast. I know there'll be a lot of people who could probably get sued by the Folk magazine if we procrastinate on that too long. But this week we'll be finding out what the Hut people's favourite biscuit is, and that's going to be interesting, obviously, given that Sam Pert is a bit of a health guru. Will he have a choice? Won't he have a choice? My goodness, there's a bit of tension, a bit of drama created for that question this week. And these interviews come from an event that we did as part of our festival that we did on the Headland Hartlepool in April, where myself, Mr. Cooney and Michael Hughes from the Young'uns are assembled at the Pothouse Pub, also known as the Harbour of Refuge. And there's lots of people assembled there to listen to us chat and hear music from our good friends Mick and Susie Darling and the Hut people. And that's what we bring you on this week's Young'uns podcast. And we're going to start with some music from the Hut people.
We're going to start off with a tune from Sharon Shannon. Sam really likes it.
It's not a happy two-step. It's happy.
Up.
Thought people, everybody. Lovely. So, how did you two get started? Because these two are brilliant musicians in their own right. Gary, you used to perform with the Beautiful South.
I was with a pop band for 13 years.
There you are. He was the star of the Beautiful South. I've always
I'll tell Paul that every night.
Yeah, exactly. Listen to the percussion. This is excellent. What was your favourite bit of percussion that you did in a Beautiful South song?
Probably Perfect Tenth.
Perfect Tenth. Yeah. Any particular bit would you like to give us a little riff that you did there on the...
Well, I haven't got the conga here, but... The
That was a key instrument. We all thought that, didn't we? The conga in Perfect Tenth.
When you hear it goes...
Sam, if you wouldn't mind...
Perfect Tenth! Hey,
sir. Sir. So, Gary, well... What is your sort of musical heritage? Where does it all start for you musically?
Well, I'm from... you're probably surprised at this, but I'm from the East End of London. I was a session player, basically, and my world was jazz and pop music and TV and film recordings. That's all I did, sessions, non-stop. So folk music completely bypassed me, and all my pals as well back home, completely, until the band split up and I met Sam. And I'm just discovering all this wonderful music from around the world, so I'm having a ball.
Where did you meet Sam then?
Ghoul.
He wasn't a Beautiful South groupie?
No. I met Sam at a fireworks display in Ghoul.
Ah, right, okay.
We do workshops for schools, and we were dressed up with a sheet with a hole cut in it over our heads, playing dustbins.
As you do.
Yeah. And we said, should we get together and have a jam? And we did, and where he lives, he's got this lovely little place, and it's got like a studio. He calls it a studio, but it's shaped like a hut. Hence the hut people. But the first gig we did ever did, because we thought, what's it like this? We're not quite sure what to do. We went out to the Cottingham Folk Club and played two numbers. And Sam introduced us as the Shed People. It could have been very different.
So Sam, firstly, Gary, what about all this this array of percussion instruments? Because when you performed the Beautiful South, was it much of a massive array of percussion?
When I got the call for, I was touring in Italy, and I remember getting the call from my mate who was a keyboard player, and he said, there's a job back at home. So when I got back, I went to do the audition and took a lorry load of percussion. So I've got like 800 to 900 instruments.
Really? Wow.
And basically, I used two congas, a triangle, a tambourine, and a woodblock. For 13 years. So
what's your...
It's very different.
Have you got a favourite? I mean, out of the 900, is there one that is the most quirky or favourite percussive instrument that you've got?
This is one of my favourites. The lagophone.
The what was it called?
Lagophone.
Lagophone. All right.
These are great. So basically, you do that with that hand. You can either hit it with a flat. On this hand, you turn it around with these bits.
There we are. So there we are, that's Gary Hammond there, and then there's Sam who plays the accordion. So, where's your musical heritage from then, Sam?
East Yorkshire.
Right. So it's the authentic Ghoul sounds, is that what we're getting there?
That's right, yeah. Born in Beverley.
Yeah.
Now living in Gilbert Ike. And, I've been playing folk music all my life. My dad, Graham Pert, you might know from the group Cockersdale, and he dragged me around lots of festivals. I actually joined an Appalachian dance team because my mum couldn't find a babysitter.
It's true.
So I went along with her one night because she couldn't find a babysitter, and I thought, that looks quite fun. So I learned Appalachian tap dancing, and then at that group called the Bootleggers that are still running today from Scunthorpe, there was an accordion player, and they always had these meetings at half time to discuss what festivals they were dancing at, and I found them really boring. I was only 12 at the time, and so I thought, I know, I'll get that accordion and have a play with that while they're all meeting together. And then I came through and said, listen everyone, I can play the accordion. And someone in that group called Linda Convery said, I've got a spare one of those accordions, do you want me to teach it? And that's it. That's how I started.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, have you got a particular sort of show piece that you like to do, solo bit? We've just had a bit of, was it lager form there? Have you got a, a flight of the bumblebee here? Here we go, everybody.
I'll play you a tiny little bit of a Basque tune called Lure Terror. It's a brisk waltz. That's the way I think of it. Got this one playing of Kepa Junkera, who's one of my favourite musicians from the Basque country. It goes like this.
I believe Mick and Susie Jarlin were going to do that, weren't you? Well, let's turn. Then, but before we have a song, in your introduction that you gave at the church yesterday was brilliant. Would you do it again? I mean, I'm not expecting you to remember it to the letter, but just to introduce yourselves to people, what you said I thought was absolutely brilliant. To introduce yourselves. You probably can't remember it, can you? But
I knew you'd put me on the spot, though, David. Hello, everybody. Hey. We're Mick and Susie, darling. Those of you who don't know us. And I'm not ashamed of it, in fact I'm proud of it. We're travelling people. Yeah. And we've spent all our lives on the road. We brought up 6 children on the road. And we haven't taken a lot out of the earth's resources because we haven't had electricity, running water or anything like that. And neither have we ever had any dole or any help from government. And as lives have been a battle, and I don't want anybody to feel sorry for us because we've done a lot what a lot of other people couldn't have done. But we've had to fight through lives, our lives, for what we think is right, just as being a human. And that is to have somewhere to stay, to put your head down. And we haven't asked for it for a long time. And we went through great battles. We had five hearings in High Court in London. Won 4 judicial reviews and then lost the last one. And we had to run for his lives. And we're sent to spend years fighting authority. But we're not into fighting, we're peaceful people. And at this point, we both thought that it was about time that we tried to get our life and our struggles and our joys over in a different way. Neither of us are what you can call musicians. We can't read a note. And for years, Mick used to say to me, give us a G. And it was only after about 4 years I found out I were giving him a D. But anyway.
It didn't matter because she was playing a melodeon and I was in tune to the melodeon. But it was a bit tough on anybody else around that wanted to join in.
So anyway, we started playing music with 3 daughters married in 6 weeks. Just couldn't take any more of it. We've just gone on and we've progressed and we've tried to put our life story into music so it comes across in a peaceful, happy way, which is the way that we've led most of our life, except for a few wake-ups. And just hope it comes over to all your good people. Thank you.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I think a very effective introduction there from Susie Darling about Mick and Susie and what they stand for and why they do what they do and what their music's all about. And now it's time to hear some of their music, and we're live from the Baptist Church now. because the recordings that we did with Mick and Susie from the Pothouse event weren't as good as the ones from the Baptist Church. They're not brilliant from the Baptist Church, to be honest. I must explain, I'm talking about the recording quality. I'm not talking about the about their performance. Well, it wasn't very good, to be honest. But and they weren't that good in the Baptist Church. But it's the best we can do, to be honest. I mean, they are travelling people. You can't expect them to be that good, can you? I mean, you know, they haven't had music lessons or anything like that, you know. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about the recording quality. So that's why we're heading to the Baptist Church rather than the Pothouse. Just in case you were wondering. I just like to keep you involved in the mechanics of the podcast. Nick and Susie Darling's first song from the Baptist Church in Hartlepool at our festival, and here to say a little bit about it is Mick Darling.
99% of people are lovely, you know. There's always been that odd few that always want to drive us out or eliminate us off the face of God's earth. And this song is about an attempt that was seriously made by a particular local council to do that. They failed as usual because they're still here, you know. We tethered our horses on the grass bird. So they planted poisonous shrubs. We took our water from a spring. So they piped it into a drain. But we're still breathing. So they made a law
still breathing in there.
Mick and Susie Darling as part of Hartlepool's Headland Folk Festival. And we're in the company of Mick and Susie Darling and the Hutt People this week. And we'll be back with more from the Hutt People very shortly. But first, we're going to have a story from Mick Darling, who's going to regale us with a tale. Sean told me the story when we were on the way to a gig. He'd heard it from Mick, and then Sean was telling me it while I was on the way to a gig. So when we were in the pub with some friends, including Sean and Michael, well, I say including Sean and Michael, that suggests that they're friends, but friends and colleagues then. We were in the pub with some friends and colleagues. So we tried to relate the story to these people, but it didn't really go very well. We kept interrupting each other, and then at one point, Becky came in, Becky Unthank, so she joined the conversation, so we had to start the story again. And then the waitress, she kept bustling around us. So we had to keep starting the story again. We started the story, I think, about three times. We had to start the story again because Becky Unthank arrived. So then we had to start again because Michael decided it'd be funny if he to ask the waitress whether she wanted to hear the story. And rather than just laughing it off, she said that she would like to hear the story. And despite my protestations, we then had to start the story again for the waitress. Plus, people were just interrupting. But what I've done is I've sort of edited it slightly from the 20 minutes that it actually was. So if you can imagine, this is sort of edited down to about 3 or 4 minutes. So if you can imagine, all of this has kind of taken place over 20 minutes, and we still haven't finished. By the time I finished this clip, which is 3 or 4 minutes long, we're actually at 20 minutes in reality. We're still not even halfway through the story yet. And then when we've heard that clip, you can have the real thing. Mick Darling at our festival telling the story properly. So here we are then. This is myself, Mr. Cooney and Michael Hughes with some friends in a pub. We're attempting to recount this story of Mick Darling's with lots of interruptions.
Years ago, they were staying on like a traveller site somewhere in Yorkshire, I think. And some good friends of theirs, a couple, she was called Lizzie, I think.
No, Angie.
Oh, Angie, yeah.
Excellent.
And thank you,
Angie. That's the end.
Mick had noticed that Angie wasn't looking well at all. She was walking about with her head between her shoulders. She looked so ill.
Head between her shoulders?
Yeah, head drooped down between her shoulders.
You said like that.
Yeah, like that. So you went down. Yeah. Between her shoulders, yeah.
It was an interesting phrase because your head is between your shoulders naturally, but anyway.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. I know what it means.
Two sentences in, it's taken 5 minutes. Mick was out one morning. He found a dead sparrow. So he put it in his pocket and he thought, oh, I'll give that to the ferret. And then he saw Angie coming down the road and he was thinking to himself, oh, she's something really wrong with her. I don't know what to do. And Angie, she had a budgie, which she called Gadgie.
Hang on, can I interrupt quickly?
No,
I have to, because you were talking about this Mick and Susie, and then Mick promised something to Angie's husband. You're doing it in a different order, that's all.
I know, but it really sounded like
he was going to...
You don't have to tell the same stories all the way over, do you?
All right, just...
Okay.
Do you want to hear about this budgie? Very good. Right, continue, Sean.
Mick knew that Angie had a budgie called Gadgie, and he said to Angie's husband, Tom or Bob, I can't remember his name, he said...
he might as well not bother with this story, then.
You probably won't believe me, but this afternoon, I'm going to make your Angie jump for joy and laugh hysterically. Thank you.
Right, hang on. So we best keep Becky and Andrew.
No, you have to get her.
Are they there?
I'm here.
Right. Let me just keep you up to date on the story. So you remember?
Nick, you should probably introduce them to everyone around the table first,
didn't you? We can do that. Right, Becky, Andrew. We have Isabel here, my girlfriend, obviously, as you know. You know them. Emily, Sean. Aisha, my friend, who I've known since I was five. it's a test of insurance more than friendship. So, we're telling a story here. Mr. Cooney is relating a story that revolves. It tells. Will you finish it too while I keep. I'll bring them up to date. We're telling a story, Becky and Andrew.
Who are you talking about, Mr. Cooney?
About. You know Mick and Susie, who came to the folk club.
The gypsy couple.
Mick was regaling them with a story when they went for breakfast. He was telling about a time that there was a woman called Angie who was really ill. And, you know, she was really down about this illness. It was like a long-term illness.
Can I just interrupt and say that with my telling of the story, by this point, you had interrupted me four times.
Yeah, but I've noticed how I've quickly summed it up, quickly for the... So it's not boring, it's just quickly gone. So anyway...
Your story's out very quick.
I know, but... right, OK. It's not quick when you keep interrupting, right?
Oh, now you're
Mick had a bit of a plan, and he said to the husband, he said to Andy's husband, I will do something.
Sorry, miss, he's
I'd love to, yeah.
Oh no, because I'm gonna have to start again. We'll put it in writing. I can't start the story again. We've already started three.
You can
What happened was, she said, Mick, you're going to miss the whole point of the story. Mick said to the husband of Angie, who's ill, she said, I will...
23 years, is this like...
Listen, I will do something today that will make her really happy. It'll make her jump for joy. She will be over the moon. I don't know what you could do, Mick, but that would be brilliant if you could, because she's been really down recently. So Mick knew that they had a budgie. Angie. Mick knew that there was a budgie. There was a budgie in the Angie and Bob as the husbands. Family. Right.
And the budgie.
Listen. Please listen. So there we are, that's 20 minutes in, and the story, we've probably got, when Mick's going to tell this story now, and he'll have managed to get where we are in the story in the space of 1 minute. We haven't really established anything particularly yet. But anyway, don't worry, we're now going to hear the story properly from Mick Darling.
We're having a horse fair, yeah. Yeah, you can imagine lovely grass verges, the children out playing, fires outside and kettles boiling, the horses tethered and all these lovely... horse-drawn wagons and think, if this is heaven, you want to die now, you know what I mean? And there's a few people there, and I look down the lane and I see a, we call them wagons, gypsy caravans, you know, coming down the road. And I know who it is, it's Joe and Angie. So they're coming down the road to pull on the fair, you see, and well, Angie's walking at the side of the wagon, and she's like, oh. And Angie's a lovely, cheerful woman, you know, a woman who sings in the pubs and real happy lass, you know. And oh, she looks so miserable. Can you imagine somebody trying to get their head in between their shoulders, you know? So, and I thought, well, this, you know, poor Angie, what's up with you? And you're not liking to be too nosy, you know what I mean? You don't like saying anything, so I never said much. And when I got a chance, I walked over and I sat by the fire with him, and I sort of kind of hinted, you know, what sort of, like, what's up with Angie kind of a thing. And well, unfortunately, she could go to the shops, so I'm left with Joe. So she goes walking over. What a misery, you know, and this is a lovely woman, lovely, happy woman. And I couldn't, I said, George, there's something wrong with Angie. I said, I thought she'd, somebody died or something, you know, someone said, no, nothing much. She said, she'll get over it. Not being funny, mate, I said, but I can make your woman jump for joy when she comes back from the shops. I said, you what? I said, I can make her jump for joy. I do that, go away, you big... Well, I won't tell you what he said. He said, Mick, darling, if you can make a jump for joy, I don't care what you do, make a jump for joy. He said, because I'm sick of her looking like this miserable little thing that she looks like. No. So I thought, OK. Now, Angie had a pet. This pet is a cross bird between a canary and a goldfinch. And it's called, we call them mules. And it's a beautiful bird. And it's Angie's pride and joy. She calls it Gadget. Now, Gadget's a gypsy word for a man. And what you call it, Gadget? And she has in this little cage, you know, on the outside, and she thinks a worldly little bird. So, in the morning, when I've been shifting my horses and things, I've been walking up and down the lane, moving my goat, milking the goat. There was a dead sparrow laid in the bottom of the hedge, and I thought, oh, that'll do for ferrets. So I put that in my pocket, right? And so I milked the goat, and I've gone.
All see what I've got to put up with.
Dead sparrow soup.
So I've brought the goat's milk back to the caravan, and I've put it in a milk bottle and put some water in with it, because the kids wouldn't drink goat's milk unless, but when it was in a milk bottle, they thought it was cow's milk, so and, you know, it didn't know the difference. So I'm thinking about Angie. So she got this lovely little bird, and she's gone to the shops. I said, what do I need to do, Joe? I said, I need to go in your caravan. He said, well, I'd call a wagon, but your caravan. Oh, do what you want, he said. Do what you want. If you can cheer her up, he said, do whatever you like. I said, I guarantee, I said, when she comes back, I said, she'll jump for joy. I said, she will jump for joy, believe me. I goes and gets the dead sparrow, and I paints it the same colour. And I goes and I swaps it over in the cage for... And takes her bird over to my place, and I've got a little, tiny little flat cage, and takes it over to my place. So it's hung, so what she thinks is gadgety, is hung in the porch where the caravan skippers aboard. So Angie comes back from the shops, and by this time her head has gone, it's right, oh. And she comes, she starts to climb up the steps to the wagon, and she... She's dead! Well, Gadget, as I said, is a gypsy word for a man, and not everybody knew that she called a bird Gadget. Everybody, there's a crowd, like, 10 times what I'm looking at here. They're coming from everywhere, even out of the local houses, and think of somebody, and they're all around. So, oh, I thought, time to act, you know, because I've got this... a bird in this little flat cage. So I runs across, gets to the... What's the matter, Angie, I said? Oh, God, Gadget's dead, Gadget's dead. Oh, I said, just a minute. I said, I said, I think she's still breathing, Angie. What? I said, let me have him for a minute. I said, can I go in your caravan? Yes, yes. So in I goes, closes the door. Does make her sweat a little, you know. So I opened the little, two little half doors at the top. Angie, what? I said, he's okay, he's breathing. I think he's just had one of them little strokes. But what I need you to do, Pat, I said, can you go down the hedgerows? I said, and I need a little bit of chickweed. I said, and some dandelion. I said, a couple of nettles and a bit of warm water. Well, she's skipping up and down, picking these bits of herbs up, things for me. And coming back with them. So she's getting happier and happier. And, thank you. I hope I said, okay. How long can I do this for, you know? You can hear a pin drop outside, believe me, you know. I thought, here we go. So obviously. And he's whistling in the cage.
But then apparently, what was it, a few years later, you got a phone call from the same lady, from Angie.
Well, they were in County Durham and we were down on the bottom side of Lincolnshire and Gadget had died, hadn't he?
Would you bring it back to life, Mick, this then? Well, it went round the entire, like, gypsy community that he was, like, some sort of miracle worker, and he had people coming around saying, can we have, you know, can I have a cat there? I think there's a concept album in there, isn't there?
We're going to hear some more music from Mick and Susie Darling, once more from the Baptist Church in Hartlepool.
And the hares, we travelled to the fairs, had wild berries and we never ate a thing. We made baskets, pegs and flowers, lived the life that was ours. Round the fireside at night our songs we'd sing. If I could live my life again, you know I'd want to be the same. Travel on the road my whole life through, for I have no regrets, never had any debts. Learned a lot that I can tell to you. La 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 la. It was early one spring morn when a people was born. It brought joy when he won that game. What we could find, we lived our lives a very special way. If I could live my life again. and you know I don't want to be the same. Travel on the road my whole life through. But I have no regrets, never had any debts. I've learned a lot that I can tell to you. Very, very special way is never ever going to be the same. If I could live my life again, you know I'd want to be the same. Travel on the road my whole life through. For I have no regrets, never had any debts. I've learned a lot that I can tell to you and you and you and you.
Mick and Susie Darling as part of the Hartlepool Festival, the Headland Festival. And as part of that festival, Mick and Susie assembled in the Pothouse Pub alongside the Hutt people. And it's to them we return right now in front of a live audience for more chat and more music.
So, as well as, again, not only being a brilliant musician and a dancer, but Sam is also a health guru as well. Sam, what you've got a job with the council.
It was a project that nearly happened. Basically, I started juicing fruit and vegetables, and I lost a lot of weight and felt really, really good and still feel great. And it's a good way of, you know, the government are talking about having to eat 10 a day. Everyone's going like, oh my God, how do we eat 10 a day? But I just have 10 in one juice. Seriously, you can do it very easy and it tastes great as well. I even set up a blog called Live For You Now that has all recipes on it and everything and stuff like that, yeah.
What do you like drinking, Gary?
Yeah.
I'm very healthy. I tend to drink lots of malted barley.
I'm sorry, Sam. You're not gonna win the vote in Hartlepool. But this sort of brings me on to another question, because we've been asked this by, we were talking about the most ridiculous questions that we often get asked at interviews, where we're like promoting an album or something, and then journalists don't bother asking about, you know, anything to do with your actual music or anything like that. They tend to ask you questions like, for instance, what's your favourite biscuit? So, with that in mind, in case there are any people who enjoy that kind of journalistic direction, what is your favourite biscuit? Are you allowed biscuits?
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
Do you just juice them up and hope that no one will notice? That's what he's doing. Stick a boost in there. No one will notice. There we are.
I think it'll have to be the classic digestive.
Yes, interesting. That's the second vote for the digestive. Yeah. The people who weren't before that was, of course, Greg Russell's choice.
Can I just say that?
If anyone's compiled the database.
I don't go for the digestives with chocolate and caramel, because the caramel doesn't work, because the biscuit breaks below it and it just all goes wrong.
Oh, but you know what's brilliant about this? When he said that, for the listeners to the podcast, he stood up. It was something he's really passionate
it's
about.
Important. So he stood up to me.
Gary, you on the other half. Is it malted fingers or whatever they call?
I don't know what they're called, but without doing any product placement, but the name's called Balsen. They're German.
Balsen.
And they've got dark chocolate and they are... I'm leaking, thinking about it. And they are superb. And they only come in a pack of 12, but they're bomb, they're gone.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Now, we might get an interesting choice from Mick or Susie, biscuit-wise.
I'm not really into biscuits.
You're not into biscuits?
No.
Oh, controversial.
I don't do sweet stuff, David.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad we can move on from that, then. So yeah. Anyway, so shall we have a final song, a final tune from the Hutt people?
I'll use this something.
We're going to use the Lagerphone.
Excellent.
And this is a tune from the Basque Country again called Bok Es Bok. written by Kepa and Co.
People, thank you very much to them. Thank you also to Mick and Susie Darling and all of our other artists at the festival. I think that is the end of our highlights podcasts. The next podcast that we do, we'll be back with various features, new exciting features, old exciting features. I'm not sure when the next Youngest podcast will be. It may be next week, but I think we're on the road more or less for the entirety of May. So it'll probably be by the end of this month. So by the end of May, the next Youngest podcast will be out. But there's plenty more to listen to. In fact, even if you think, no, David, but I've listened to them all, for goodness sake, listen to them again. It's like you appreciate, you always, every time you listen to it, you always appreciate something different. There are hidden layers, subtexts, intricate nuances that can only come to light upon the, in some cases, the 18th listen. So listen to the Youngest podcasts again. Listen to them in different temperatures, because, you know, you respond to things differently depending on the temperature, what kind of foods you've had to eat. There's all sorts. How you're sitting, get in the lotus position. Try listening to the Youngest podcast in the lotus position. A lot of people do say that profound effects happen when you do that. So there's lots of different ways to appreciate the Youngest podcast. But anyway, I shall leave you to explore that. And before we go, let me just quickly announce as well that our singing weekend tickets have gone on sale. So if you want to spend a weekend with the Youngens, you can do in November. We've got a number of places in Cumbria. We've got two weekends going on. If you want to find out more about that, go to our website, theyoungens.co.uk. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back very soon. Goodbye.